This is KZSU, Stanford. I'm Robert Harrison alongside Vittoria Modlo, coming to you from the underworld of KZSU. It's that time of year which Dante called the shortened day and the great circle of shade. Namely, the day when the sun travels the shortest path through the sky. In sum, we're coming to you as our North Pole reaches its maximum tilt away from the sun, the day with the least daylight and the longest night, otherwise known as the winter solstice. The winter solstice lasts only an instant, yet its most precarious, volatile moment in the revolution of our Earth around its star. In the depths of this longest night of the year, our tilted planet comes to a momentary standstill before taking a turn, a discreet yet decisive turn toward the light. Maybe that's why the winter solstice is associated with Saint Lucy, whose name evokes light, lucency, from the Latin lux. Lucy heralds the light hiding in the ultimacy of darkness. She is the saint of the planet's turn from its maximum tilt away from the sun toward the sun. That's why at this volatile turning point in the great circle of shade, we thought to share with you a few poems about hibernal darkness. The three poems I've chosen to recite reach us from the somber depths of the human psyche. Yet I would ask you as you listen to keep in mind that at the far edge of darkness, a turning toward the light can and does take place. It's the earth itself that assures us of this. I'll begin with John Donne's A Nocturnal Upon St. Lucy's Day. This is one of the great depressive poems of the Western canon. It begins with the speaker stating that it's the winter solstice, and that the external world is all but dead, but not nearly as dead as he is in his soul. He goes on to describe how love transformed him into a happy and fulfilled being before changing him into a dead thing. Just after the poem's halfway point, we learn that the speaker's lover has died, and we gather that he died along with her, if not physically, then spiritually. The poem concludes with the speaker wishing a happy summer season to other lovers. This poem was most likely written in the aftermath of the death of Donne's beloved wife, Anne, who died in 1617, just days after she gave birth to their 12th child. Here we go with A Nocturnal Upon St. Lucy's Day. "'Tis the day's midnight, and it is the day's, Lucy's, who scarce 7 hours herself unmasks. The sun is spent, and now his flasks send forth light squibs, no constant rays. The world's whole sap is sunk, the general balm the hydroptic earth hath drunk. Whither, as to the bed's feet, life is shrunk. Dead and interred, yet all these seem to laugh compared with me, who am their epitaph. Study me then, you who shall lovers be at the next world, that is, at the next spring, for I am every dead thing in whom love wrought new alchemy, for his art did express a quintessence even from nothingness. From dull privations and lean emptiness. He ruined me, and I am rebegot of absence, darkness, death, things which are not. All others from all things draw all that's good, life, soul, form, spirit, whence they being have. I, by love's limbeck, am the grave of all that's nothing. Often a flood have we two wept, and so drowned the whole world, us two. Often did we grow to be two chaoses, when we did show care to aught else. And often absences withdrew our souls and made us carcasses. But I am by her death, which word wrongs her, of the first nothing the elixir grown. Were I a man, that I were one, I needs must know, I should prefer. If I were any beast, some ends, some means, yea, plants, yea, stones, detest, and love, all some properties invest, if I an ordinary nothing were, as shadow, a light, and body must be here. But I am none, nor will my sun renew. You lovers, for whose sake the lesser sun at this time to the goat is run, to fetch new lust and give it you, enjoy your summer all. Since she enjoys her long night's festival, let me prepare toward her, and let me call this hour her vigil and her eve, since this both the years and the days deep midnight is. There's a great deal one could say about this majestic poem, but the winter solstice is not the time or the mood for commentary. What we need instead is a mournful music of the dead season. So I'll move on to a poem by Percy Bysshe Shelley that was never published during his lifetime. It's almost certainly about his first wife, Harriet, who had committed suicide by drowning in the Serpentine River near London. 9 days before the winter solstice, on December 12th, 1816, the London Times reported, I quote, "A respectable female, far advanced in pregnancy, was taken out of the Serpentine River and brought to her residence in Queen Street, Brompton, having been missing for nearly 6 weeks. She had a valuable ring on her finger." It's hard to say whether this haunting, melancholy poem expresses an unavowed remorse for Harriet's suicide or merely a reminiscence on the past. The poem has plenty of allusions to the suicide, with a strong presence of rivers and flowing water. What we know for sure is that Harriet left a death letter naming Shelley as the cause of her misfortune. Shelley's ode to Harriet is full of tenderness and affection. This, despite the fact that a few weeks after Harriet died, Shelley married Mary Godwin. The human heart is a deep and strange place. The poem is called Lines, The Cold Earth Slept Below. The cold earth slept below, above the cold sky shone, and all around with a chilling sound from caves of ice and fields of snow, the breath of night like death did flow beneath the sinking moon. The wintry hedge was black, the green grass was not seen, the birds did rest on the bare thorn's breast, whose roots beside the pathway track had bound their folds over many a crack which the frost had made between. Thine eyes glowed in the glare of the moon's dying light as a fenfire's beam on a sluggish stream gleams dimly. So the moon shone there, and it yellowed the strings of thy tangled hair that shook in the wind of night. The moon made thy lips pale, beloved. The wind made thy bosom chill. The night she shed on thy dear head its frozen dew, and thou didst lie where the bitter breath of the naked sky might visit thee at will. To wrap up this tribute to the winter solstice, I'll read one last poem about the dark, so that darkness may grow. It has its origins in a poem by the Italian poet Andrea Zanzotto, who died at a ripe old age about a decade ago. In Italian, it's called Perché Cresca. The original is a gnarly, baffling, somewhat anagrammatical, yet sonorously hypnotic poem, like a thicket of twisted trees. Here are the first few lines in Italian. Perché cresca l'oscuro, perché sia giusto l'oscuro, perché ad uno degli alberi e dei rameggiare e fogliare di scuro venga più scuro, perché tutto di noi venga a scuro figliare, così che dare ed avere più scuro albero ad uniche radici si renda. Sorgi nella morsura scuro tra gli alberi, sorgi dal non aborescente per troppa fitezza, notturno incombere, fumo d'incombere, vieni, chine già salite su chine lo scuro. Vieni fronde cadute salite su fronde l'oscuro. Succhiaci assai nel bene oscuro, nel cedere oscuro, per rifare nel gioco istante ad istante di fogliame oscuro in oscuro figliame. Cresci improvviso tu, l'oscuro gli oscuro. What I'm going to read in English is not a translation of Zanzotto's poem, but rather a free adaptation of it that Matteo Perper and I collaborated on together. Matteo Perper is a Stanford undergraduate and a student of mine. He has a fine poetic ear, and together we adapted Zanzotto's poem, or imitated if you prefer, for this occasion, so that darkness may grow. So that darkness may grow and the darkness be right, so that the trees, one by one, leafing in the dark, may birth and branch more radically, and the gloom loom more darkly. Let the underworld of the worm rise into the masticating gorge of the overhanging night, and give lambency to the shadow fruit of our dreams. Come, darkness, suck us up into your gradient generations, into your ardent propagations, so that the gradients climb steeper. May the fallen branches stack higher and collapse in arborescence. Here where the darkness darkens, here where our nocturne ends and begins again, let the sourcing desire ramify into innumerous genders and dark parturitions, each with its root of darkness pushing ever more darkly out to take in the stars. Nothing is more traditional than the association of life with light and death with darkness. But on this winter solstice, which has always been my favorite day of the year, whatever the year, let's not forget that all of life originates and germinates in the dark, be it in the seas, the sand, the soil, the egg, or the womb. We have all come forth from the dark. Everything that has an end has a beginning, and everything that begins comes to an end. Life emerges from the matrix of death, and at the extremity of darkness, the revolving earth takes a turn toward the light. I'm Robert Harrison for Entitled Opinions. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
kingdom by the sea. Lived my Annabelle Lee. I was just a child. She was just a child in this kingdom by the sea. A wind blew from a cloud and chilled my